Well, good afternoon, everybody. It's great to be here. For those of you that I haven't met before, as John said, my name is Jo. I'm actually married to John, and we've been part of the community here at KXC for about 4 years now. And the last year of which we've been leading the student work here, which has been an absolute joy and a privilege. If any of you have got to know the students whilst you've been here at KXC, you'll know that they're such a fun bunch to hang out with. They are so full of life, full of joy and courage. I highly recommend getting to know some of them if you don't already. So yeah, that's a real privilege to be part of that here. Alongside that, in my week, I work for the NHS as an assistant psychologist, which means that I work with older people who have mental health problems. So it's a nice bit of a mix in the week, which I really enjoy. But as some of you may not know, I actually grew up in Wales, where I've spent the majority of my life so far. So I've had an absolutely fabulous weekend after the football results on Friday. But I'm not going to speak in a Welsh accent all afternoon or mention it too much, because I know it's a bit of a sore topic for the English fans. So we'll leave it there. I won't say any more. But for those of you that have been around for the last 2 weeks or so, you'll know that we're in the middle of a series called Rhythms of Grace, which is about the rhythms or the spiritual disciplines which we can practice that help lead us to fullness of life. And Pete kicked us off 2 weeks by reading this verse from Matthew 11, verse 28, from the Message version, which says, "Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me. Get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me and you'll learn to live freely and lightly." So these rhythms aren't things that are made to hold us back or weigh us down. They're rhythms that we can practice that lead us to living freely and lightly, lead to us living a full life. And they're rhythms of grace because they're free. They're unforced rhythms of grace. And Pete likened it to God offering us a gift. He's holding out this gift to us, and it's up to us whether we choose to accept it or open it. But if we do choose to accept it, then we'll find that they are rhythms that can lead us to fullness of life. And they're also rhythms that can be thought of as healthy boundaries from some of the negative things amongst us in the world around us. So Pete kicked us off 2 weeks ago looking at the rhythms of rest, so looking at the Sabbath. And Sarah talked us through service and submission last week. And tonight we're going to be looking at gratitude and generosity. Now, when I first spoke with Pete a couple of weeks back about this talk, I did think I'd drawn the best of all the straws with these topics, because I think they're a little bit nicer, maybe a bit easier to talk about than service and submission. But what I found is, as I've been preparing this talk and reading around it a little bit, I've actually been blown away by these rhythms. So I hope to share a little bit of that enthusiasm with you this evening. So let's start with gratitude, and let's start with what the Bible has to say, because that seems like a good place to start. So if you want to follow along, do you want to grab your Bibles and turn to Colossians 3, starting at verse 15, which is on page 1184 in the Pew Bibles, if you want to grab out one of those. So this is a letter written by Paul to the church in Colossae, and in this verse he's talking about thanksgiving. So Colossians 3, starting at verse 15. "Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body you are called to peace, and be thankful. Let the message of Christ dwell among you richly as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom through psalms, hymns, and songs from the Spirit, singing to God with gratitude in your hearts. And whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him." So here Paul is saying, it's quite strong actually, he says, and be thankful. It's almost a command. We're told to be thankful. He goes on to say that we should be thankful in our gratitude to God. We should sing songs with gratitude in our hearts. So we should be thankful in our worship to God. But our thanks shouldn't just stop there, because Paul goes on to say, whatever we do, whether it's what we say, whether it's in what we do, we should be giving thanks. And it's a theme that we see throughout the whole Bible. So if you flick to the Psalms in the middle, you'll see that thanksgiving is peppered throughout the whole of the Psalms. And again, in another of Paul's letter, don't worry about turning to this one, I'll just read this one out. In 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 16, Paul writes, "Rejoice always, pray continually, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus." So I think the Bible's quite clear. As Christians, we're called to be practicing gratitude. We're called to give thanks. But why gratitude? Like, sure, it maybe sounds a little bit easier than service and submission that we were talking about last week. Well, firstly, I want to suggest that practicing gratitude changes our perspective. It changes our perspective from what we don't have to what we do have. It changes our perspective from our inability to God's ability. And we see people practicing this in the Bible. We see people in the Old Testament, like Samuel, making monuments called Ebenezers to mark these moments, to remember the times when God's provided. And the word Ebenezer means stone of help. So an Ebenezer was a physical monument made of stone that people built, which was testament to the times when God helped, when God provided. It was testament to who God is, to what he had done. And it helped God's people to remember these things and be thankful for them. Now, my memory is absolutely awful. So for me and John, we've started to try and remember some of these moments for us. So at home, we've got a memories jar, slightly cringe. But just to give you an example of some of the things that we put in the memories jar. So the most recent one that has gone in this weekend is that Wales got through to the semi-finals of the Euros. I'd also put in that Wales got through to the quarterfinals and that Wales got through the group stages. So I'm soon going to need a whole other jar just for Wales' sporting achievements. But there are also some more profound moments in there as well. One of which was when we moved into the flat that we're currently living in January. For us, we'd been a little bit nomadic for a time and finally moved into the place where we're going to be for a little while now. And for me, that's a moment that I want to remember. It's a moment that I want to be thankful for. I want to keep being thankful that we have a home. I want to keep thanking God for his provision. And in doing that, in remembering and in giving thanks, it shifts my perspective to the things that I do have, to the things that God has done. And going back to that verse in Thessalonians, Paul says that we should be giving thanks in all circumstances. So we should be giving thanks in the times when it feels like things are going well, the times when it feels like God is providing. But it suggests here that we should also be giving thanks in the times when it feels like things aren't going so well, when we might be asking the question, God, where are you in this? And in the places of despair, as well as the good times, giving thanks in all circumstances. And one of those times for me was about 2 years ago. It was the second episode of anxiety and depression that I've experienced in my life. And it was brought about by quite a stressful situation at work in combination with lots of other things in my personal life, which I was finding quite stressful and totally overwhelmed me. And I began just to shut myself away, to hide away. And at the time, I thought that was the best strategy. I thought going away, having a bit of time to myself to rest and recuperate was what I needed. But what I hadn't realized was that I was triggering a spiral where I began to feel lower and lower, where I ended up not going out and, or not seeing anyone, not doing anything. My confidence dropped. My concentration and my motivation to do things just plummeted. And I just really struggled to even leave the house some days. Coming to church was a struggle. And in that moment, all that I could see was me and how bad I felt. It just felt like that feeling was going to last forever. I just couldn't see an end to it. But thankfully, with the help of my GP and some helpful CBT, as well as the support of my family and close friends, I began the slow journey of recovery. But for me, in that story of recovery, there's also a story of thankfulness, a journey that I was going on of thankfulness, where I started to try and be thankful in the little things. And it was a choice, because I think it is a choice when you're in that place of despair to choose to be thankful. And that takes courage and it takes effort when you're in that place where you don't feel like there's something to be thankful for and you choose to be thankful. that does take effort. But for me, as I was doing that, I realized that my perspective shifted from me and how bad I felt. And my perspective began to lift up to others around me. My perspective began to change to see other people and see God through practicing thankfulness and through practicing generosity as well, actually. So gratitude can change our perspective. Gratitude, I think, is also one of the healthy boundaries that I mentioned briefly earlier, which can protect us from things that are not so good in the world around us. So now if we have a flip to Ephesians 5, verse 3, which is on page 1176, if you're following in the Bibles. I'll give you a second to find it. So again, this is another letter from Paul, this time to the church in Ephesus. So Ephesians 5, starting at verse 3. But among you there must not be even a hint of sexual immorality, or of any kind of impurity, or of greed, because these are improper for God's holy people. Nor should there be obscenity, foolish talk, or coarse joking, which are out of place, but rather thanksgiving. For this you can be sure, no immoral, impure, or greedy person, such a person as an idolater, has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. So here, Paul is saying that we are called to be a holy people. And he then lists a number of things that we should be avoiding if we are to be holy, and says, but instead of all of these things that we should be avoiding, we should practice gratitude. He says, but rather thanksgiving. And when I read this, it seems a bit like a golden nugget of all the rhythms, if it protects you from all of these things that he lists, protecting us from things like foolish talk and greed. Now, in my job as an assistant psychologist, a lot of what we do in the NHS has to be backed up by the research. So I was just curious, and I thought I'd have a little look to see what the academics in psychology thought about gratitude. And I found this professor in America called Professor Robert Emmons, who's actually kind of the world expert in gratitude research, which sounds like quite a fun job. But this is something that Robert Emmons had to say. The sense of security that characterizes grateful people makes them less susceptible to needing to rely on material accomplishments for a stable sense of self. I'll read that again. The sense of security that characterizes grateful people makes them less susceptible to needing to rely on material accomplishments for a stable sense of self. So what he's saying here is that if we're practicing gratitude, we are less susceptible to the draw of material things. It's protecting us from that allure of materialism, from that allure of greed, which is, I think, what Paul is also saying in Ephesians 5. And again, I want to suggest, as well as gratitude being a healthy boundary, it also leads to fullness of life, as I spoke about earlier. It moves us towards generosity and full living. And I find a lot of this research that I've been looking at quite interesting, and that might be because I've got a little bit of an inner geek inside me. But I'll tell you, and you can make your own mind up if it's interesting or not. So Robert Emmons has basically spent the last 15 years of his life researching gratitude. And what he and some of his colleagues have found is that people that practice gratitude are more psychologically healthy, more physically healthy, and more relationally healthy. So people that practice gratitude, they're more psychologically healthy. They found in the research that people don't necessarily experience less negative events. They don't experience fewer negative emotions. But what they find is that people are better able to deal with those negative emotions. And that's why I wonder why the Bible suggests that we should be thankful in all circumstances. Because gratitude is actually like a psychological barrier to protect us against some of those negative things in the world around us. Surprisingly, it also leads to physical health as well. People that practice gratitude, believe it or not, they do exercise more. More recent research has found that people have lower blood pressure, which seems amazing, really. And people are more relationally healthy as well. People have better and stronger relationships. They found that people that practice generosity, that practice gratitude, are more generous in general. They perform more kind acts to other people around them. So practicing gratitude moves us towards fullness of life. And I just get quite excited by this research, really, because I see it as giving us a bit of evidence for why what the Bible tells us to do 2,000 years ago is a good thing. Like, it's, for me, it just emphasizes that. But the one thing I would say is that, so in this research trials that have been done, they get people to write down every day what they're thankful for, which is amazing. But the Bible goes one step further. It's not just being grateful to the people around us and thanking other people. A really important part of practicing gratitude is practicing gratitude to God. So that's a really key part. So as practicing gratitude leads to generosity, I'm now going to move on to talk about generosity. So flicking over to the last verse that we're going to look at today in 1 Timothy 6, which is on page 1194. So 1 Timothy 6, verse 17. So this is another letter from Paul, this time his first letter to Timothy. And starting at verse 17 says this: "Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life." So again, I think it's saying here that as Christians, we are called to be generous. Paul is saying to Timothy that he should be commanding people to do good, to be rich in good deeds, to be generous and willing to share. So again, this is something that we need to be practicing as Christians. And again, I think practicing generosity is something that changes our perspective as well. Because Paul writes that we shouldn't put our hope in wealth, but we should put our hope instead in God. So it's changing our perspective from the fact that we are the ones that provide for ourselves and wealth is secure, to thinking that God is actually the one that provides and he is the one that is secure. And that's actually realizing Paul emphasizes here that God richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. It's realizing that in fact God is the most generous being that we will ever come to know, and letting that affect the way that we live our lives. Now, during the Euros, there are a lot of European football stories in this talk, so sorry for those of you who are totally bored of football, but I'm going to carry on anyway. So during the football, during the Euros, Sky Sports have been doing this competition called the Super Six. Now, it's free to enter. You just have to guess the six final scores of the six games that they choose. So picture the scene. We're 3 weeks back. It's the beginning of the tournament. It's Saturday evening, and it's England's first game against Russia. Me and John are at his family home, and we're watching the game with his family. England are winning. The adrenaline is pumping, and then England let in a goal at the end. But what's unsurprising about this is not that England actually let in a goal, because let's face it, that's fairly normal for England in football competitions. What's surprising about this is John's reaction to it, because he sat mutedly next to me, and he seems actually quite okay with the result of a 1-1 draw. Now, what has happened was that he'd entered the Super Six that week, and this is the third game in a row that he'd got the correct final score of. So we were three games down, three to go, and if we got all six correct, we're in with a chance of winning £100,000. Amazing. Now, John and his dad, they both love sport and they love stats. So then ensues this really excited conversation of, well, what are the chances of getting three results right in a row? Surely that's so small, and there can't be that many people left in the country and with a chance of winning. And gosh, like, we're nearly there. We're halfway to £100,000. So Sunday arrives, the day of the final three games, and me and John are sat over a leisurely cup of tea on the Sunday morning, and we start planning what we're going to do with our winnings when they come in. So we start off by saying, well, you know, we'll give a bit to KXC. We'll give a little bit to our family and maybe some friends. And then I decided that I'd quite like to travel the world, because I've never done that. And then John's decided that he wanted to get a VW camper van, so starts Googling on Auto Trader what the options are. And then we thought, well, you know, we've just moved into a new flat, so maybe we'll get some furniture. And then we realized that actually people tend to save some of it, don't they, and invest it for future. But by the time we got to that stage, we realized that the £100,000, it didn't seem that much. We didn't have that much left to invest in whatever we wanted to invest in. So then we started kind of rejiggling the numbers and thinking, well, you know, I don't think our family or KXC, I'm sure like they don't want that money. I think actually that we'd be able to spend it quite well and quite wisely. And actually, John and I think we work quite hard. I think we deserve it, really. And I mean, I've never won so much as a raffle in my life. I think this is the time for me. This is the time for me to keep the £100,000. I think we'll be able to spend it well. I think we probably deserve to keep it all and decide what we want to do with it. So we've made these plans. Sunday afternoon comes, and we are gunning for a 2-0 win for Croatia against Turkey. So I'm sat down, the TV's on, and I am gunning for Croatia like I've never cheered before. I'm like their biggest fan, and they score a goal. Amazing. But I don't think I'm ever going to cheer so loudly for them again, because they didn't get the second goal that we needed. They only scored one against Turkey. And in fact, for those of you that are following the competition closely with your wall charts, you'll know that Germany didn't score three, and you'll know that Northern Ireland did not draw. So in fact, we got none of the final three games right. And in fact, actually, that week, there was a bit of a freak thing that happened where there were multiple people that won, so they had to share the money anyway. So I don't think we'd have been able to get the VW camper van. But what I was just really struck in that moment. I like to think that I'm not a Scrooge. I like to think that I've got a small ounce of generosity in my blood. But in that moment, greed had totally taken over. I'd started seeing that £100,000 as mine, as something that I deserved. And I think when we start seeing things as our own rather than God's, we grow a heart of entitlement rather than a heart of generosity. I saw that £100,000 as something that was mine. But if we see things as generous gifts from God, I think it helps grow our generous heart rather than our entitlement heart. So it changes our perspective again. And again, generosity is another healthy boundary that can protect us from things like greed and materialism. Timothy says that we shouldn't put our hope in wealth, and we shouldn't be arrogant about money. And what I realized in that situation 3 weeks back was that I think sometimes we think, oh, if only I had a little bit more money. If I had a little bit more, then I'd be generous. I'd love to be generous, but if only I had a little bit more. But what I realized was that actually, the more you have, it doesn't get easier. The more you have, the more it costs, or the more it feels like it costs. So if we're not practicing it now, then we're never going to practice it. It's not something that comes naturally to our selfish natures. It needs to be a choice. We need to choose to be generous. And in that act of choosing to give away, we keep our selfish natures at bay. And finally, generosity also moves us to fullness of life. Going back to that verse in 1 Timothy 6 again, where Paul says, command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. So Paul's saying here that if we practice these things, if we practice doing good deeds, if we practice sharing and being generous with one another, we begin to take hold of the life that is truly life. So I'm just going to spend the last couple of minutes just thinking about how we can practice some of this stuff, because there's not things that come easily to us. I don't know if any of you have come across Google's Ngram viewer. For those of you that sounds like I'm just talking garbage, it's basically something online that charts the frequencies of words used in printed text over time. So I typed in gratitude and generosity and looked at the frequency in printed text over the last 200 years. And it's just a graph that goes like this. It just plummets. Gratitude and generosity aren't practices that come naturally to us. They're not practices that come naturally in our culture. They're practices that have been fading for the last 200 years at least. I don't know why they can't do anything over 200 years, but there we go. So just thinking about how. Well, I mentioned a couple of ideas earlier about gratitude. Firstly, we have to remember the things to be grateful for. So whether that's an Ebenezer, whether you want to build a stone structure or a memories jar, whatever that looks like, a way to remember the things to be thankful for, and then practicing gratitude. But let's look at generosity as well. The Bible has some ideas about that as well. So in the Bible, it suggests giving away 10% of what we earn, or giving away our first fruits. Now, I don't know how many of us have fruit to put in the collection bags, but the idea of this was that the people of God would give away the first of the harvest, the first fruit that came in, not necessarily knowing what was going to happen in the rest of the season or how much of the rest of the harvest was going to come in. And it was an exercise of handing over control to God and realizing that he was the one that ultimately provides. And so, I mean, for me and John, I'm definitely the money control freak amongst us. I'm a saver by nature. And sometimes I've been tempted to wait till the very end of the month when all the expenses are paid, when I've put a little bit in savings, and then give out of what I have left. But I wonder if God is asking some of us to give first, to be generous first, as an exercise of recognizing that God is ultimately the one that provides, in as a way of helping us go on that perspective change of realizing that he is the provider, that he is ultimately the one that is the most generous. And I wonder, for some of us as well, we really resonated with when I said about, oh, I'd love to be generous if only I had a bit more. Like, let's face it, London's a tough place to live. Some of you might be students and have a really small income. Some of you might be juggling the costs of raising a family in London. Others of you might be just balancing the cost of accommodation and travel and trying to have some kind of social life. I'm not saying that we need to be reckless here with our money, because the Bible says that we give according to what we have. But what I realized 3 weeks ago is that if we don't learn to practice generosity in the place that we're in, with what we have now, whether that's a lot or a medium amount or not a lot at all, then if we have more, we're never going to do it. And going back to that verse in 1 Timothy again, he says, command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. I don't think Paul is just talking about money here. We can be generous in other ways as well, with the things that we have, with our home, with our car, with our thanks. But the thing with money is that it can so easily get caught up in us and lead to that greed and materialism that we talked about earlier. So whether it's practicing remembering the things that God has done, whether it's remembering to be thankful, whether it's trying to be generous first, whether it's trying to give and be generous in the little that we have. I think gratitude and generosity are things that God clearly calls us to do, but they are also rhythms that if we practice them, will lead to fullness of life.